Hey everybody, this is Duncan, and this is Duncan Do Cinema, the debut episode. I hope everybody's doing well, coming to you straight from the heart of rainy Chinatown. Today I'm going to be in conversation with Sarah Adina Smith. I hope I'm saying that right. I know I am, because I know Sarah. How are you?
What's the name of it?
Duncan Do Cinema? Like French, like... Pierre du Cinema. I thought that was like a... Yeah, am I mispronouncing it already? I should probably be able to pronounce the name of the show. The moment I decided on it, I thought maybe it was... Now I'm kind of backpedaling on it.
No, I'm making you insecure about it.
No, I think it's good.
I feel badly that I'm giving you name insecurity.
Well...
I'm supposed to be here to make you feel really good about your first show.
No. You're not supposed to be here to make me feel...
You're
you can
sure?
make me feel bad. No. We're here to talk about you. I guess the title does limit me a little bit, but the Webster's definition of cinema is moving pictures, so we still could talk about television for content.
Or those flip books.
Or those flip books, comic books.
Do mean on? Like, it's like Duncan on cinema.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe. If anyone knows French and wants to tweet at us... It's
yeah,
at Duncan Burm. At Duncan Burm. I didn't do a different handle for the show.
It's a lot of upkeep to have two handles.
It's a lot of upkeep. I feel like if I had too many handles, no one would go to my Twitter feed. That's why my dog doesn't have his own Instagram, because
I don't recommend
it. I want people to come to me.
It's time to scale back on all that.
So I'll just do my opening salvo, Sarah. Set the table for what the show's about. I know people might think another podcast about films. Well, check your facts. This isn't a podcast. This is live radio. And
he didn't tell me it was going to be live until like 2 minutes ago.
Well, who knows?
I thought it was going to get edited perfectly.
No, this goes right into earbuds all over LA. No, it's. I would never do something. I know you don't like clean.
I'm glad you didn't tell me it was going to be. You think I like it raw? And
I think you have an indie aesthetic that I wanted to honor by bringing you here to this kind of shabby studio and doing this live broadcast.
It's incredibly hip and indie here.
Now, Sarah, I don't know if you've heard, but I've heard a lot of things about film dying. And 2006 has given me a reason to be discouraged, and it's also given me a reason to be hopeful. And certainly this show, this live radio show, is going to be a place to champion the type of movies I like. Mm-hmm. So for the listeners, if you're very excited about the new Harry Potter, if you're super pumped about the new Avengers, this might not be the show for you. I hope I didn't just...
You just lost your
I hope
entire
I didn't just cut
audience.
Our audience in half. Uh-oh, hold on, we've got a... Yeah. Yeah.
Is it also, like, loud in your headphones, or are we too loud?
It is a little
technical
loud in my
for,
headphones.
Yeah,
is
it's loud
is
for
it
me, but
loud?
I'm also very sensitive to volume, so...
I think, according to the meters, we're right on track.
Okay.
I think I'm seeing the meters kind of in the middle, so I think we're good. You could always take off one headphone
oh,
or
shit. That's how the pros
kind
do
of
it.
Cockeye
oh my
it,
God,
something
I
like
that.
That.
I already feel better. Okay. The death of cinema.
Yeah, is that where we were? The death of cinema? So, I probably just sliced our audience in half, and I may have just alienated you, because I don't know, maybe you came on today and you wanted to talk about the new Harry Potter movie or the new Star Wars movie. I'm not sure, and I just put my foot in my mouth.
I like all kinds of movies, and I don't like most movies, if that makes sense, but I'm not prejudiced against any sort of one... type or like budget level. It's like I really crave like the blockbuster Hollywood only a studio can make it dramatic huge world building experience. I think those are great. It's just really rare that they're good.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm almost always in the last few years disappointed. It feels like almost when I'm going to see a big studio movie, even if it starts out well, I'm kind of waiting for the wheels to fall off it.
The writing is never very good, which is mind-boggling to me because so much money gets dumped into these movies, and it's crazy to me that they don't take more time to make sure the script is actually good.
They don't take the time, having been someone who moved out here to LA to work in movies and did work in movies as a writer and got very discouraged. Yeah, I think the fact that the scripts aren't very good oftentimes has to do with the fact there are just too many writers involved. Directors bring on their own writers, and then these
and everybody just makes decisions based on fear, like fear of being fired or looking bad to the person who's above them in the hierarchy. I think
agreed. Sheep.
Yeah.
They're sheep.
Yeah.
And that's why TV is so nice. TV is so nice to work in and to watch because the writer is king.
Yeah.
It would seem to me.
But we're not here to talk about those big movies you were saying. We're here
we could dabble and talk about those big movies.
You know what's a really amazing...
I haven't seen Doctor Strange,
giant
so...
Giant movie that, like, makes me love capitalism and all its sins and, like, the big monster studio system, the big corporate machine.
I can't wait.
Spartacus? Oh, which so I good. Saw... Yeah, Kubrick's Spartacus, which I saw on Shrooms, which probably also helped. But... It is like, it made me want to work in the studio system because it's just this, like, the beautiful might of the almighty dollar in play.
Yeah.
Like, I love the huge scenic paintings and just the gloriously wasteful number of extras everywhere. Like, you could just, you know, you can summon a whole city to your set, which is amazing.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that in the theater.
Great movie. Yeah.
That is a great movie. I went to the same college as Kirk Douglas.
Really?
He's one of the few interesting people that went there.
Where did you go there?
St. Lawrence. It's in upstate New York. But yeah, Kirk Douglas is great. And I haven't seen Spartacus in years, but I feel like that script was pretty solid. I think Dalton Trumbo either wrote it or co-wrote it, or that seemed like a...
To be fair, I really was just wowed by the scenic painting, so maybe with all my big talk about scripts not being good enough, I shouldn't be speaking about that one, because I wasn't really evaluating story so much as color palette.
I have a feeling Spartacus holds up.
Okay, I think so too.
You should watch it
before I talk about it. But yeah.
Well, talking about movie habits, are you someone? Do you feel like your movie going has tapered off? Do you feel like you make an effort to go to the movies? Are you watching things on VOD? Are you not watching movies at all? Are you sitting at home reading books?
I go through different phases. I think my attention span has gotten really awful, and it's my own fault. But I've been watching really good movies, but, like, still falling asleep after 30 minutes, which is not their fault. It's, like, the fault of me wearing too cozy of clothes.
Right.
So I like to go see movies in movie theaters. I'm less likely to fall asleep and more likely to appreciate them the way they're meant to be appreciated.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But I'm not... I should be going to more than I have been. And I think sometimes when I'm in a writing mode... I have a tendency to not want to watch good things just because then it's, like, discouraging and intimidating and I feel like everything I'm doing sucks. So, because I'm insecure. So I would, like, prefer to see awful things while I'm writing because it makes me feel like there's hope for what I'm doing.
Oh, my God. I love that. I love that strategy. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I end up watching, it's like I'm working on a road trip movie. I'm going to go watch the best road trip movies. And yeah, and it ends up being intimidating and
confusing. Yeah, you're like, I can't top that. What's the point? The world doesn't need another one.
Then I'm mimicking their stuff.
Yeah, it gets in the way.
Well, I'm with you in terms of falling asleep on the couch watching movies, which is why I really love going to the movies. And I also think the other thing that's so great about going to the movies is there's no chance, unless you're going to get up and leave, which I think I've walked out of maybe three movies in my life, sitting on the couch, even if you're video on demanding something, there's always that chance to take out your phone, to do something else, and it just doesn't have that same kind of
magical experience. I'm so guilty of being on my phone during movies at home.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to movie shame you.
This is what this is about, isn't it? That is the death of movies. For me, at least, I'm participating in killing it by being on my phone and being distracted and watching them when I'm tired. And if anything, this is a wake-up call to the world right now, Duncan.
I feel like I'm an old fogey movie shaming you for watching movies at home when that's not the case. You're making movies, which we're going to get to very soon.
I deserve to be shamed.
Movies can... I mean, I like movies that are mostly people just sitting in a room talking, so maybe I don't need the enormous screen for that. And I can sit home and watch them.
But you can sit home and watch them and still appreciate them?
Yeah, I can. But I do have to say there's something special about going to the movie theater, paying my whatever, $3 to park at the ArcLight, my $50 to see the movie, and I'm in it.
I need, like, the public aspect of it to be shamed into, like, sitting up straight and putting on pants, because otherwise I'm just at home and I'm, like, getting more and more horizontal no matter how good the movie is. So what? I like just the very fact that, like, by going out in public I have to behave like a well-adjusted adult.
So if you put on pants, that means you're going to make it through the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. If I see you with pants on at a movie, I'll be like, oh, this must be a really good movie.
She's taking this
seriously. It meets the Sarah Dina Smith criterion.
Yeah, pants.
Mm-hmm. Just pants. All right. So movies maybe aren't particularly dying just yet. Do you feel like, as someone who makes movies, which we're going to talk about soon, do you feel like you think about that? I mean, when you were making your first movie, The Midnight Swim, were you thinking about, oh, I can't wait for people to see this in a theater? Were you thinking about, this is going to play great at home? Was that even part of the process?
Yeah, I don't think I got that far in my thinking with The Midnight Swim. I think with that one, I was just so hungry to make my first movie that it was I was really just thinking about it day by day and the actual creation of it. I don't think I really visualized how it would be received. And I do think it's a movie that plays a lot better in theaters. Though people have good experiences at home, especially if you like watch it with headphones, I think. But a lot of my movies tend to be very psychological and very sound-based, so they do require attention span. And clearly, like, I'm a prime example of the problem in arena.
I love that. You make movies for people like you.
I make movies for the opposite of me, apparently, for people who have a really good attention span and are willing to pay attention and bring something of themselves to the watching experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about The Midnight Swim.
Yeah.
I met you years ago.
Yeah, how did we meet?
We were doing a scout for our friend Matt's film. We were looking around the desert.
That's right.
And I met you in the desert. You gave me a very negative tarot card reading.
I did. I'm trying to remember what it said. I'm pretty sure it was probably accurate, because tarot doesn't lie.
Well, if it was accurate, I think I'd be dead by now. I mean,
it didn't say you were going to die.
My life was over, basically. And there's nothing worse than a negative tarot card reading mushrooms.
We were also on mushrooms. I guess we're talking about mushrooms twice on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I have a few mushroom-related questions,
so we're going to
get more into that.
Good.
We were out in the desert, and I remember I later read a script of yours that I really liked that had some of the same themes as the movies you made, but originally you were doing a Kickstarter and you were painting a lot of birds.
Oh my God, that's right.
Tell me how many birds you painted for a Kickstarter project.
I mean, it was over 80 oil paintings of birds. That was my first bird brain scheme. Sorry.
No, I was setting you up for that. That was a long way around for this pun.
Do you see the problem? This is live. You can't edit that out.
You don't want to take that out. That's
gold.
When
you publish the podcast, can you take it out?
No, there's no, this is on the internet forever.
I'll own it.
Yeah, own it.
My bird brain scheme to raise money for my first movie was to make oil paintings, which, like, in retrospect, I could have gotten a minimum wage job on top of my other job and probably raise more money for my movie. Because it was just so laborious. And I think I lost my hearing during the process because I was drinking Red Bulls to stay up all night making these tiny paintings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't sleep at all for many months. And then at one point, I was doing this thing where, like, have you ever had this happen where you feel like your brain is a computer and it just, like, reboots? Like, someone just hit the reboot button and you, like, go to black for a second and then, like, bong, and then you slowly start to wake up.
I think I need to do that.
No,
I'm still waiting to hit the reset button.
Really unhealthy. Like, that would just start happening spontaneously while I was painting these birds. I wouldn't recommend it as a technique. It was too much work, I think,
for what we were able to raise. For young filmmakers out there.
But yeah, so we had originally done this Kickstarter for this other movie that was supposed to be a much bigger budget movie, and we had investors ready to give us this gigantic lump sum of money, which seems huge even now to me. It was like $1.5 million budget. And we needed to hire a casting director to help us attach the bankable talent to like get that deal to go into motion. And we didn't have money to hire a casting director, so we did a Kickstarter for that. The Kickstarter was successful, and then the company that was going to give us that financing like dissolved. So then we're stuck with, I think it was like $15,000. and I wasn't sure what to do with that money at that point. And what happened is another movie I had written, Goodbye World, ended up getting financing, and I stayed on as a producer, so I went off to make that movie. And all the while was thinking in the back of my head, like, what do I do with this other money? Do I even want to make that script anymore? At that point, I had so many heartbreaks with that script. So I rewrote that script. It became another big script that was like, I think, $2.7 million. And again, we were quite close getting our financing multiple times. And at the last minute on that one, I think like a month before we were supposed to start shooting, our investors changed their mind about our lead actress and decided they weren't going to give us money anymore. So it was like heartbreak after heartbreak. And that's how The Midnight Swim came about, which was just like, I had this $15,000 Kickstarter money and a series of failures, and was basically at the point of, I either need to make a movie or not, and decided to make a micro budget movie. So we used the $15,000 as our seed money, and then raised investments in $5,000 increments, mm-hmm. and raised about $50,000 total, and went and made The Midnight Swim in 2 weeks.
It's amazing. So from the ashes of the previous project,
it was from the super
came The Midnight
depressing
Swim.
Don't want to get out of bed, not sure what I'm doing with the rest of my life ashes. It was dark. It was like definitely dark moment in my life, where I'd been, at that point, it had been like 7 or 8 years of trying to get a feature made and failing. And so it was just a kind of a do or die moment. Like, I'm either going to go make this thing, or I need to spend my time on earth doing something that helps others. Like, if I'm going to be selfish, I should at least be good at it.
That is a thought, right? I often have as well, where I'm just like, oh,
if I'm going to suck at this, I should, you know, like, I should, I felt like it just was a turning point for me, and, you know, maybe I still should have gone and done something better for the world. I don't know. I think about that now more and more, especially like post-election, you know, what just gets you into that headspace of, does any of this matter, and should we all just be focusing on the demise of planet Earth?
Yeah, let's just focus on the demise. Okay. Well, you ended up being selfish. You made a wonderful movie. Let's not let Donald Trump ruin
the terrorists win. The terrorists win if we
art.
Stop making movies. Oh, God.
So just uh-huh. to back up, where can people see The Midnight Swim now? And can you just
everywhere? Yeah, if you want to really support filmmakers, that means me and the people who helped me make it. You can go to the film's website and rent it directly, or buy the DVD or Blu-ray there. But you can also see it on Netflix, iTunes, Amazon, and other things I can't remember.
Okay, so yeah. It really is everywhere.
Shudder.
Oh, Shudder.
Cool. Do you know about Shudder?
I don't.
Shudder is like a new sort of horror-leaning, genre kind of leaning aggregator, like not unlike Netflix, but they're much more, it's really nicely curated movies for people who like genre movies.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. I really want to get into Filmstruck.
What's that one?
Oh, Filmstruck is, they took all the Criterion movies off of Hulu, where I was watching them, and now they've combined those movies and the Turner Classic movies for a streaming system called Filmstruck, and
great.
Curated indies, but I don't know, you need a stick for it, or I mean, you can easily get it on your computer.
Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get it onto my television.
Oh, don't you have like a...
I have a semi-smart
Apple
television.
TV,
I don't have
any
Apple
sort of
TV. I have old basic cable. I can get the Hulu on my television and the Amazon.
If you can get the Hulu, you could probably get all the other things too.
All right. Well,
just download the app.
You might have to come over after and help me with this.
Okay.
But I saw The Midnight Swim. I saw it at AFI, and I loved it. And I saw it also at the Downtown Independent, and played so well in both venues. And one thing I was very struck was that the three actresses in it, who are also wonderful, and I've seen so many other movies being great, but it was very rare to see people play siblings and it be very believable.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie is can be a little creepy and very dark, and I am struggling to even find the right you know, genre to call it, a psychological thriller, but there was also this humanist warmth, and
mm-hmm.
the fact that you believe them as the three sisters and the family unit, there was just so much warmth coming from them.
Yeah,
I felt like it was such a great heart, gave such great heart to the movie and really made it resonate, and I still think about it.
I think it's a family drama in disguise. like a family drama that has deep sadness and that kind of permeates the movie and haunts the movie a little bit. But yeah, thank you for saying that. I mean, those actresses are out of this world. And I think we all really focused on creating family intimacy. That was kind of the number one focus for all of us. It helped that we all lived in the place where we shot it. So it's actually, I mean, I have two older sisters and a younger brother. And I think that stuff starts to feel real when you begin to get on each other's nerves and stop being polite. And I think that was one of the great benefits of all living together, is like we got to get past all the niceties and professionalism and just like be really real with each other.
No, that's great. So you had your 15,000, then you had your 50,000.
Yeah.
You had 2 weeks, and where'd you shoot it?
In Okoboji, Iowa.
Okay, and did you have time to rehearse?
No. So, let's see. Two of the actresses got there, I think, a day or a day and a half before we started shooting, and then Alexa Palladino, I think, arrived on the day we began shooting. So it was kind of the typical thing you hear about with low-budget movies, where everyone's just sort of meeting, saying hello, and then diving into it. But yeah, like I said, I mean, I think these are actresses who understand that their most important job is to find ways to have real relationships with each other on screen. So that was my focus, and that was their focus right away. And one thing we did is that I think really helped us find gravity in the movie is we decided that the mother character should always be present. So the story of The Midnight Swim, mm-hmm. is this... for your listeners.
Please, because yeah. I did such a bad job trying to put it in a genre box. So I certainly, and this was the other thing. Yeah. I was so glad you were the first person I asked to come on the debut show, but it also made me a little nervous because one of the things I like about your movies is they're very hard to classify. So that also makes them little tricky to talk about, not only because they're hard to classify, but also I didn't want to give away any spoilers. So yes, give the
I'm
listeners a little
flattered.
Seed of the
I'm
Midnight
flattered
Swim.
I'm flattered that I would ever make you nervous, Duncan. Okay.
Well, I mean, we are on live radio right now.
Radio. Okay, so The Midnight Swim, it's been a bit, right? So it's about these three half-sisters that come back home because their mother went mysteriously missing. Their mother was like a kind of quasi-scientific environmental activist type who was scuba diving and trying to find the bottom of a lake where no one's ever found the bottom. And so she goes missing during one of these dives to find the bottom of a lake that has no bottom. And and the sisters are sort of dealing with the fact that she feels both gone and not gone because there's no real closure with the disappearance. I'm always really interested in movies about disappearances. In fact, I'm writing one right now just because I think it's puts you in such a strange position. In terms of your relationship to grief. So, yeah, the movie's a lot about that, about how each of the sisters grieves differently. But also, as I was saying before, I think what we tried to do in building the family intimacy was we decided that the mother would be present in every scene. So we were really focusing on, like, what is each sister's relationship to the mother and how is it different, and also, like, almost like feeling her presence in the room, even though she's clearly not there. And the mother character became the gravity for the movie, really, and the thing that we could all build off of.
Well, that's great. And now that you say that, yeah, I can picture that. And I love the scene where they all do the impression of the mother, and it starts funny, but it turns very, not so much sad, but so sad and sweet.
But everyone has a very specific vision of a parent. I think that's true. In my family of four siblings, I think we each have different relationships to our parents and different ideas of our parents. And then, people are complicated.
I think in my family, everything's been overshadowed by my parents voting for Trump.
That, oh my
that's
God,
all
they
I can,
did, Duncan?
That's all I can think of right now.
Is that why you didn't go home for Thanksgiving?
No, I wasn't going to go home either way, but I almost didn't go home for Christmas.
Do you have siblings?
I have two. Well, now I'm really getting into it. I have two siblings, and one of them voted for Trump as well.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not the best. So I guess it's just
that's
me
really
and one
hard.
One brother who didn't vote for Trump. And my parents read fake news. But that's for another live radio show.
I mean, I think you should probably quit this podcast and focus on just slowly changing their minds.
Yeah.
For the next one, for the congressional election, there's no 2018. Changing their
minds. Yeah. let me ask you, so for The Midnight Swim and for the new movie, mm-hmm. Buster's Malheart, there's, I would say, there's certainly a dose of, or themes of spirituality and themes of maybe mysticism and mm-hmm. almost a little bit of the occult. And I wondered if you had grown up, not to get too Marc Maron on you, but in, mm-hmm. with religion, mm-hmm. in your background, with something like that. I just wondered where that came from. I mean, it's also, I watched the your short in the anthology, The Holidays, and there was also...
You did your homework.
I really did my homework, yeah. Although now when you sat down and started talking about, Goodbye Cruel...
Goodbye World.
Goodbye World.
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
Well, I didn't direct that one, so
exactly.
It's okay.
So I left that off your oeuvre.
That's okay. Have you seen The Sirens, my first short film?
I have not seen The Sirens.
Well.
Oh, I'm really being schooled here. I mean, if this was a 2-hour live radio show,
okay.
I would have seen it all.
It's okay.
But I thought for an hour, we'll just do the tip of the iceberg, those three.
Yeah. To answer your question, both my parents are Jewish. I was raised Jewish. I went through lots of different phases in my childhood about my relationship to God or the unknown. At one point, I think I was pretty sure I was a Buddhist. Another point, I was doing a lot of like chakra meditation. Another point, I think I was pretty like passionately Jewish. And then somewhere, I think maybe when I was 14 or 15, I was reading, I actually think it started with Freud, weirdly enough, and then like I was reading a lot of Freud, and then that led me to Nietzsche, and Nietzsche led me to Camus, and I just kept reading and reading, and ended up getting deeper and deeper into like the canon of Western philosophy, I guess, and lost all faith in a definable God, or even faith in the notion of faith. And I went to college and I studied analytical philosophy, and I began to like look down on anyone who needed faith in their life. I saw that as a sign of weakness, or like that they, couldn't find humanist reasons to do the right thing. Like they needed like some sort of divine guidance to do the right thing. But the truth is, ever since I lost that faith, I've always missed it. I've always like longed for some feeling of meaning or magic or like a relationship to a universe mm-hmm. that isn't so cold, I think. So I think a lot of my art and filmmaking strives to like poke at that void and see if I can find any magic. And, to be honest, I think I have found it, but I also don't have, it's not that it's necessarily brought me back to faith, you know, or like brought me back to the fold in any way. But I have, I think, a more compassionate view of what it means to be alive in the world, and also much more compassionate view in terms of why people crave and need those beliefs, I think. I think it's really important, especially like we, the liberal elite in our bubble, like not to mock other people for their beliefs. I think they come from a really true place, and they come from a place of people who actually have a lot of times ecstatic experiences. I don't know if I'm saying that quite right, but like they really have experiences where they feel whisked away by mm-hmm. by some force they can't explain, and this gives them this great faith that they find to be very precious. You know, the closest I have to that is when I'm writing or making art, I can feel whisked away or like in the flow in the creation of the art. I think that's why I like to do it. So I can certainly relate to that feeling of being swept away. And know that like it's true for me when I'm doing it. So, you know, how dare I ever try and take that away from someone else.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I would agree. As someone who grew up, my family's very Catholic, and if that's now not as much really in my life, it definitely leaves a hole, because you grow up with a certain, set tablet of beliefs, and then you're always kind of looking for something to replace it with. You're always looking for something to kind of plug in to, mm-hmm. to replace it with, but it's not that easy, and it does leave a gap, and my worldview will always be very much from that Catholic perspective. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have writing or art, movies, those things, I'm not sure what I would do. But I do have the same feeling when you were talking about, should I just chuck my career and do something not selfish? Mm-hmm. I often feel that way with people who do have faith and are doing, or do have strong faith and are doing really good charitable works. On one hand, there's the feeling of, why do they have to do it under the umbrella of a certain religion? Mm-hmm. Why can't it just be for humanitarian reasons? But mm-hmm. then at the same point, I look at my life and I'm like, hold it, what am I doing? I'm like, working in Hollywood, and I don't have that faith, but I haven't, reached out to do amazing works with my life.
Right. But I think
it is helpful, that church, that community.
Yeah. I do think that, there are plenty of examples of humanists who probably would call themselves atheists, atheist humanists, who really do dedicate their life to progress in the human story and to making this planet better. So I don't think that you have to have faith or church to be selfless. I don't know if I would connect those dots, but I think I don't know. I think the thing that I respect about people who do have faith is, for the most part, this notion that they're responding to something outside of themselves or something bigger than themselves, I mm-hmm. think is something we can all learn from, whether or not you believe in God. Like, there's so much navel gazing in our culture, particularly today, in like this sort of selfie culture.
You're looking right at me when you said that. Just
like
directly
at me. Duncan.
Hold on, I gotta do some tweeting.
You and your radio show mm-hmm. and your tweeting. No, I mean, we all have the problem. So I think that it's a nice reminder that whatever, we all need to find a way to live outside of ourselves in some way, and really just stop thinking about only our story and obsessing about our story. It's like, in some ways we have a society, and this is going back to your original topic of like the death of film. In some ways it's like,
thank you, I'm glad you tied it back to my original thesis.
Wrap it back around, of like this notion of like we're growing towards, because of technology is becoming more and more accessible, it's like we're all auteurs and there's no one left to be the audience, like we're all so self-obsessed with our own story that we're publishing 24/7 through our social media, that we're like in some ways we're all our own little mini filmmaker directors, and then we're too self-obsessed to even take time to be an audience.
That is very true. I still occasionally send stories to literary magazines, and I don't know the last time I picked up a literary magazine and read a story in one. There are so many, I'm like, who is reading these things? But at the same time,
you want yours published.
I want mine published in one. Mm. Oh, interesting. All right. Well, I'm glad I didn't just imagine the threads of the occult and spiritualism in both movies. I mean, they're pretty prevalent in both.
I think in both movies, I would say that I'm like interested in crafting a kind of cosmology, maybe more than like the occult necessarily. Like, I'm interested in testing out a theory of the universe and doing it in like the lazy armchair philosopher way, where like I don't have to write a really laborious essay to like prove my point.
You just have to make a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
The easy way
to
make
to,
a movie.
Do it dramatically, okay. and tell it through emotions and characters, which I think is so much more fun. So yeah, I think probably the reason I like to make movies is to get to do philosophy without having to do the boring work.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's drop back into the Midnight Swim. You do the film. Where did it premiere?
Oh, at Fantasia.
Okay.
Yeah, Fantasia Fest in Montreal.
And
then had its U.S. premiere at AFI.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, so yeah. I feel like I was special. I was at the...
You were super special.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. It does well for you. It's a wonderful movie. And then what next? Did you already have a script for Locked and Loaded?
No, I thought... So I made The Midnight Swim and then thought I would go back and try to make that failed project. And actually had a couple companies like ready to give me money for it. So I could have, but I reread the script after making The Midnight Swim. I think I learned so much from making The Midnight Swim, and every movie you make changes you, I think, as a person. If you're doing your job well, then you should be changed. And so I read this older script and it no longer really affected me. And so I put it down and then ended up writing Buster Small Heart. Which came about because Duncan, this is an exciting story because it was the first time I ever won something.
Oh.
Yeah.
That hard to believe.
No, I would apply for things all the time and would get runner up or like the green ribbon, like thanks for trying. And this was the first time that I applied for something and I won this amazing fellowship, it was called the Screenwriters Colony. And it's this writers in residence program. They take four writers each year and they give you a month of focus and solitude on Nantucket.
Ooh.
In this awesome old house. And there's like a chef who provides meals and there's whiskey and wine.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's kind of amazing. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. So I go on these long nature walks in Nantucket, which was really meaningful for me because at the time I was living in downtown LA and had been for a decade and was just like really craving nature.
Right, right. You were a pioneer in downtown LA.
Yeah.
I think you were my first downtown LA friend.
Oh, well, we've since left, so right. I don't know if that means anything.
Right, but I've dropped you.
Yeah. But so I went to Nantucket, I was taking nature walks. I think that really helped slow me down. And ended up writing Buster's Small Heart in a month there. And then everything came together really unusually quickly for that movie, which sometimes, I mean, I don't know. And now I'm writing something new and I'm like automatically a little bit worried. Like, oh, should it be as easy? And if it's not as easy, is that a bad sign? You know? But I think that, at least this is what I'm telling myself right now, is that every movie requires its own conception process and they're all not going to look the same and some will come easy and some will take more time. So
I would imagine that each script would have its own growing pains and
right?
that if
I
it came
so.
Too easily you might be
right
you know,
or like every
falling into the trap of doing a similar type of project.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, so but that Buster's My Heart came about really kind of, I mean, not that we didn't have to work at every turn. It was a lot of work and stress and everything. But there were, like, kind of these, like, magical gifts from the heavens to get religious on you again for a little bit. But, like, it felt like things were falling into place in, like, really beautiful ways on that movie. And so I wrote it. Let's see. What year is it right now? 2016?
We're in 2016.
So I wrote it in October 2014. We shot it in October, November 2015. And then we just premiered at TIFF this September.
Oh, great. And that was your first time at for the folks listening, the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yes. And then we got a distributor, and we are going to be releasing this spring. We're just talking to them right now, trying to lock down a release date, but it's looking like either late March or late April, something like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, again, with that movie, I thought the performances were great. I don't watch Mr. Robot. I saw the pilot, and I really liked it, and I've been meaning to dip back into it. I remember seeing Rami Malek is the star, and I remember seeing him in Short Term 12, a movie I love, and thinking he was really good in that, and DJ Qualls, who I thought was as I've always liked him, but I thought I'd never seen him as good as he was in the film. And I just really, I thought for Rami Malek, he's in every scene, I think. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could just tell us, is that someone, did you have a connection with him? Is that someone you were working with a casting director to find? What was the process to find him for the part, which really seems like it would have make or break your movie?
Yeah. Yeah. It was tough because we just knew that we couldn't make this movie with just any actor. It really had to be someone with a kind of a fire in his belly. And I think we, again, this is like one of those like mana from heaven type moments. Like we connected with Rami, did the sort of traditional send an offer to his agents and manager type, Hollywood way to go about casting. But
Hollywood bullshit.
But it just so happened that we actually what happened was we sent out the offer, and then I was driving around the very same day, and there were billboards up everywhere with his face for Mr. Robot, and I was so disappointed because I was like, God damn it, we're too late. Now he's crazy famous. His face is everywhere. He's probably getting so many offers. So I actually thought we missed the boat, but what happened was he was in New York at the time. I had to go to New York for a job, and so for some reason, like, when you fly into town and you tell an actor's agents or managers, like, I'm in town for 3 days. Can we get a meeting set up? Like, you're more likely to get a meeting for some reason.
Now, that is a hot tip.
Isn't that hot tip?
If people listening...
I almost don't
want
to give
down.
People,
that is
don't,
a great
I don't want to
tip.
Give that tip away. It's
and
so
I can't
good.
Edit that out. That tip is out there right now.
That belongs to all of you. That belongs to your listeners now.
Right.
So, yeah. So, like, for some reason, popping into town, like, created a sense of urgency that got me the meeting. And I think Rami and I really connected in that meeting and really just bonded over the material. And, I suspect there were a lot of forces at play that would probably prefer he didn't go make a totally experimental, strange little indie mm-hmm, at that moment.
Mm-hmm, so it's the Hollywood suits.
Right. So it's really to Rami's credit that he really is a true artist. Even though he's so humble, he'd probably hate me using that word, but he's a craftsman, and he really, I think, has a desire to make movies that are going to answer questions in his own heart. You know, I think that he's not necessarily just playing the game. I think he's really trying to make meaningful choices.
Yeah. Well, he seemed in it to win it. In this
yeah,
movie.
He's
And it
he's
made me
so
want to
good.
Go back and watch Mr. Robot.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, to be honest, I feel really badly, but I haven't watched it.
I was going to ask you then. I didn't want to put you on the hot seat, but I'm glad
yeah,
you put yourself on
I
the hot
did.
Seat.
I mean, I...
Was he making, like, Mr. Robot references, and you were like,
no.
He's like, should I do it more like this, like season two of Mr. Robot?
No. I mean, I think if anything, he and I were both, even though I hadn't seen Mr. Robot when I was making it, we were both well aware that there were going to be some thematic overlaps between
okay.
the movie and the show. And so I decided, like, I would much rather not see the show and not have that in my head. I didn't want to be second guessing my instincts based on what was already out in the world.
Smart, that's good, because you're watching crap when you're making
yeah,
films
exactly.
and writing scripts,
and
not watching good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard Mr. Robot's really
okay.
good. I don't want to watch.
You're so smart.
I heard it's great. I don't want to watch a great show when I'm making something. So, but I've watched enough now to know what those similarities are, and I think that. What's really interesting, I think this is probably why Rami was interested in the material for Buster, which is that, like, so Mr. Robot is very much about a man struggling against the machine of society. And I think Buster's Male Heart explores that on a slightly different plane. It's about a man struggling against the machine of the universe, the sort of the merciless mechanism of the cosmos. So in some ways it's similar, but it's I think Buster's Male Heart is slightly more biblical or slightly more spiritual, perhaps.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I would not know because I haven't seen Mr. Robot, but now I'm going to do a little compare and contrast.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine if you got too close to Mr. Robot land, he would have said something.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure.
I'm sure they're
I'm calling Rami Buster. Rami is such a focused actor that when he is working on your show, he is fully on your show. I don't think
right.
his brain is anywhere else.
I just like saying
yeah.
Mr. Robot. It's
you just
a fun
like saying,
title.
It's a great
to say.
Title. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So for this film, obviously a bigger budget, You shot in Montana?
I did.
You shot in Mexico?
I did.
Did you shoot anyplace else?
We did some like green screen pickups in Los Angeles for the stuff that goes on TVs within the movie.
Okay.
So we did, I think, like half day or day in LA doing that stuff.
All right, and you have a big hot TV star as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Were there things when you showed up the first day of set, as far as being your second movie, a bigger movie, what was kind of the biggest surprise? Or was there one? Was it business as usual?
Well, our very first day of shooting was the most intense day, probably, of the entire shoot, because I'm very masochistic and I like to start with the hardest thing first, because I think I feel better if I get it off my plate rather than like saving the hardest thing for last. So we actually started with all the open water ocean shoots, where we went down to Mexico and shot off the coast of Mexico. But what happened was we were supposed to have 2 days of shooting all that stuff, and we looked at the weather forecast and it was 100% chance of thunderstorms on the second day, where we, you know, for the safety of the crew, can't be out in a boat on open water.
So your plan for a nice, easy second day was perfect.
So what happened was, yeah, we thought we had 2 days, and it was clear we were only going to get one. So we had to combine two, and we had two full, you know, the schedule-wise, it was packed. So we had to, like, somehow cram two shoot days into one. And it was just really insane, but it was also so liberating, I think, because it was really like a rally the troops type of moment. Like, this is an impossible mission and we must succeed type thing. And so I think in some ways, because all the odds were against us, I think everybody rose to the occasion. And it was such a, by the time we finished that day, it was just like such a, we all had experienced such victory together. I think it really amped us up for the rest of the shoot. I think it was ended up being a real blessing.
And what a great trial by fire first day.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, so you rallied the troop, Spartacus style.
It was actually kind of like Spartacus. Okay, another detail, Duncan, was that the reason we were shooting off the coast of Mexico in the Sea of Cortez is because when we scouted it, it was like nature's water stage, because you can walk out for a mile and the water only really goes up to your knee, but it looks like you're in the middle of the ocean.
Oh, Sea of Cortez.
Right? Another hot tip. However, and this is the little asterisk to that hot tip, you have to learn how to read the tide charts correctly, which I did not. And so it's Sea of Cortez. Water is only really up to your knee, and that's amazing. However, the tides are really extreme. So, like, I can't remember exactly, but we were worried about the crew having to move equipment, like, a mile just following the water all day long. So I looked at the tide chart and thought I was picking the day where it was, like, flatlined and really not extreme high or low tide. So that was correct, but it turned out that because I don't really know how to read tide charts, it was like 6 feet of water all day long instead of 2 feet. So it was like just all of our plans had to go out the window, and we were like building these scaffolding, but like the scaffolding was like barely above the water, and we like almost lost the camera and the very extensive lenses multiple times, and almost like, you know, like lost our sound guy and all of his gear multiple times. So it was
lost him to the sea.
Yeah, exactly. We were all almost lost to the sea. So it was a very trying first day, but also, yeah, very triumphant. The fact that we didn't lose anything.
Hot tip for young filmmakers: don't make your first scene in the Sea of Cortez.
Or do it, but like consult a surfer about the tide charts.
Oh, you don't know any surfers?
I'm surprised you're not a surfer. It was lazy filmmaking on my part.
Right.
I wish I was a surfer.
Yeah, I know, me too.
I feel like I'm a surfer.
I was a surfer.
I feel like I'm a surfer at heart, except for the board and the waking up early and the going into the ocean parts.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, besides my plans of dominating the town and being a big, famous everything, was, I told everyone back east, I'm going to be surfing in the morning, skiing in the afternoon. Or maybe it was the other way around. I'm going to live in Topanga Canyon. And I don't think I even went to Topanga Canyon until like 5 years of living here. And yeah, I'm a terrible surfer. And I certainly can't imagine anyone surfing and skiing the same day. And I think I ski once every 5 years.
Yeah.
But enough about my crushed dreams.
But you could.
I do love seeing the snow-capped mountains in LA and knowing that I could. I could pop up there, strap on the board, and jet out to Malibu and
I think the best
do it all
thing,
in a day.
The best thing about living in any city is there's a lot of things you know you could do even though you don't do any of them.
True.
But the fact that you're living around that potential makes you feel like life is almost about to happen.
True.
And that keeps you from suicide.
Yes. Yes, it does. Or I could just go to the ArcLight and see two movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could actually do any of those activities and feel better about yourself. That's the other thing.
Yeah. I have a, you know, I've got my list of Hulhauser type activities that I mean to go into.
And I mean, you seem, I have to say, from my perspective over here, seem like a very active fellow.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, look at
really?
You're hosting a radio show, and I know you
Live
also
radio.
Do the food group
thing
as well, and you're a television writer and a movie writer.
Oh,
Duncan,
my God. This is,
I think you're
I love
doing
this part of the show. This is my favorite part of the show.
You're a dog owner?
That's true. That's true. I am a dog owner.
You're doing just fine.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I was fishing. I was fishing. All right. So let's, we're winding up a little bit, but I have a few more questions. Let me just check my very, very detailed notes.
I wish we could have questions from callers.
Well, you
is
know.
Is that a thing that can happen?
In theory, we could. Let me see. I haven't checked
That'd be
the,
so exciting.
I haven't checked the Twitter.
Do you think anyone's listening?
I have a feeling. Let me check my Twitter. I have a feeling some people are listening.
Should we just say your phone number right now on live radio and see what happens?
My phone number is
323-356-2130. Say it again.
323-356-2130. But we don't have to get it. Well, hold on.
But if someone did call right now, that would be really amazing.
That would be exciting. I mean, Patrick Bryce just favorited the tweet that you're on the show.
I love Patrick Bryce.
Who knows?
Maybe
he's listening. I don't think I have his number. I would tweet him. Hold on. I might be getting a question right now from Twitter.
No way.
Mm-hmm. And the question is...
Uh-oh. Is it something like they don't like me? I feel like no one's going to like
me.
No,
it looks very positive. Uh-oh. Sarah, great show. Oh, that's nice.
Oh.
What's next?
Ooh.
Oh, that's interesting because I was going to ask that. Let's say it was 10 years ago. The career arc of a filmmaker seemed a little more... not cut and dried, but a little more standard. You either went to make your third feature, maybe you write it, maybe you go into a studio system and look for some type of assignment, or who knows. But now it feels like a lot of people make a feature or two, then they're moving into television, Lena Dunham style, or I just watched Search Party the other night. So I'm wondering what's myself and...
Yeah, what's the Twitter handle? Who's asking?
At Anna VT.
Hmm.
Is asking what's next.
Anna. Well, as Duncan described, it's an uncertain landscape, uncertain times. So I'm trying to do multiple things at once because you never know what's going to really stick. So I have a feature script I wrote based on a Paul Theroux short story. Takes place in India that we're casting now. I would love to be able to go shoot that in India.
I just realized I've been saying it Paul Theroux the wrong way for years.
I think it's Theroux. I met him, and I'm pretty sure he said... I know, I would say Theroux. I think I used to say Theroux as well.
Did you approach him to get the rights?
I did, and I actually did that, like, maybe, gosh, 5 or 6 years ago. And he's just been very generous and patient with me. Because I'm finally... It's a bigger film than The Midnight Swimmer, Buster's My Heart, so I'm finally maybe in a position to be able to actually get it off the ground. So, trying to do that. And then I've got a TV show. Actually, it's a limited series. Jonico Donnelly, my producing partner, and I.
Wonderful producer.
She's amazing. And we just sold that to CBS All Access.
Amazing.
We'll be developing over there. CBS has this, they're trying to do like a premium style brand, kind of along the lines of like HBO, Netflix, Amazon stuff. And they're rebooting Star Trek. That's going to be the big tentpole. So we're excited to be over there. And I directed a couple episodes of TV. That was fun.
Okay. Anything that we would be keeping our eyes out for?
Yeah, you should. It's a new show by the Duplass brothers, Mark and Jay Duplass, called Room 104
right.
for HBO.
Okay, I've read about that.
I think they're going to air it in May. I don't actually know what the schedule will be for that. But that was
And that's an anthology?
Experience. Yes, that's an anthology. Super cool premise. Every story is completely different, and different cast of characters, different tone, and the thing that connects them is that they all take place in the same hotel room. So they're kind of like these really amazing different one-act plays. So that was a great experience. And then...
Those Duplass brothers, I hear they're everywhere.
they're pretty prolific. Yeah, very inspiring and prolific. And I think this is very different from them, from what they normally do in some ways. This has a slightly more heightened tone, I think.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah. Sounds like you get your fingers in a lot of pies.
I've got my fingers in tons of pots because I'm insecure and you never know who's going to come and break my pots.
Lightning round of questions. There's really only two more.
Let's do it.
I have one or two.
Okay.
On the show, we like to talk about the cross section where romance meets art. Or we would like to talk about it if I do more of these episodes of the show. But anyway, you collaborate with...
Wait, are you, like, looking for a date? Is that what it's going to be?
No.
Are you, like, who's available on the...
No.
Okay.
That was not where I was going with this.
I'm sorry.
But we can talk about that later.
Okay.
No, I was talking about the fact that you work with your husband, Shaheen.
Yes.
Who did an amazing job shooting both films as cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly amazing job with Busters. And he also, can I say this, what else he does? Or is it a secret what else he does on the movies?
He's annoyed with me for talking about it, but too bad, because I think it's important that people know. He also is the composer. He uses the name Mr. Squinter for his music.
Right. I'm glad you said it, because I was going to say Mr. Squishy.
I love Mr. Squishy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, both are great names. He's Mr. Squinter. He's very kind of quiet about his music. He's actually working on another album right now, very sort of secretly. He has all this music that he doesn't show people ever. And so I think that was partly why I was like, please, please let me use some of your music for this movie, because I knew then it would finally get out into the world. And I think his music is so good.
It's really, in Buster's Malheart, it's really fantastic. And what's the hardest part about working with your spouse?
Duncan, he's going to hear this.
I know. I want some dirt. I actually asked him the same question.
You did?
I have his answer.
Shut up, you did?
Right in front of me.
Oh, my God.
He says, it's hell.
Is that what he said?
No, I didn't talk to him about it.
Oh, no, I mean, because honestly, we almost got a divorce on the Midnight Swim. It was really intense.
Oh, my God, why didn't I ask this question first?
I know, I'm like
God
sweating.
God damn it.
I'm sweating right now. No, it's really, really hard, because I think the benefit of working with someone you love is that they care about it just as much as you. We both, like, really, really care about the project. You never doubt that. I think that's kind of the benefit of, like, family business in general, is you really, like, can trust that someone's heart is where your heart is, too. But for that reason, it makes disagreements all the more intense. And so the first week of shooting The Midnight Swim, I was, like, there was moments where I was certain my marriage was over because it was so hard. And I think what made that hard was probably my fault, because I was so focused on the actors. I think I was taking him for granted as a cinematographer. I think because we're married, sometimes I can take communication for granted or just think he can read my mind and forget I have to, like, actually verbalize out loud my thoughts to him. And so I was really focused on the actors in the first week of The Midnight Swim, and maybe not giving him enough of my attention. But then by the second week, it was, like, the best week ever. And, like... can I say this? I can say anything I want on the
anything
radio,
you want.
Right?
It's yeah, we pirate like, radio.
Yeah, we were like second week. We're like fucking every day after we wrapped, and it was like best thing.
Hell
best
yeah, you can
ever.
Say that.
Yeah, exactly. It was like it was like marriage restored by second week, and it was like, yeah. I think he and I fell in love, and our chemistry has so much to do with our creative relationship. So, what's hard is that if the creative relationship is not going well, then neither is our romance. But you know, the reverse of that is also true. Like, we flourish on the romantic side when we're creating something we're both really excited about and it's going well.
Hot tip for young filmmakers out there.
Yeah.
If the relationship's on the rocks, make a second feature.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm getting the signal that it's time to go. But I want to thank Sarah Dina Smith for being my guest on the debut episode. This was so fun. I'd rate you a 11 as a guest. I'd give myself a 6.
No.
But I think overall it makes us like a 16.
You don't need to.
I wasn't fishing this time.
Okay, but let Twitter rate you, Duncan.
Okay, I'll let Twitter rate me.
Don't
rate yourself.
All
right, thanks for being my guest. Everybody see The Midnight Swim and look out for Buster's Malheart.
Thank you. This was fun. Thank you.